We've made progress, but we have more work to do. Let me be clear. To any corporation that's not brought their prices back down, even as inflation's come down, even as supply chains have been rebuilt, it's time to stop the price gouging and give the American consumer a break.
Oh, my gosh. Dude. So I was like a little kid in the 80s. And I know that things like really sucked in certain parts of the world, particularly before the Berlin Wall fell. And I'm just saying, like, that's probably something that would have been said in those countries at that time. That probably is something that would have sounded familiar to some people. You know, the whole government control everything and price control. And then, of course, you're coming out of the Carter era. I'm just saying that is some freaky deaky stuff that we just heard from Biden. And it's the crazy thing is that he's trying to cover his backside. I mean, yes, he's a statist, but he's also trying to cover his backside. And none of this is working. I am literally made of opinions today on this and a million other things. First off, welcome to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon here with you. Dana Loesch, kind of a crazy day. And we've got a lot of stuff to go over. Related not just domestic issues, economy, oh my gosh, real estate, a million things, education, you know, the state of everything with social justice and all that other stuff here. Then we're going to get into the latest with Israel and then and Hamas and the hostages and how Hamas is now purposefully splitting up the families so that the kids that are released, they have to leave a mom or dad in custody. They're monsters. So we're going to get into all of that and the continued push from this administration. And I got some 2024 Democrat stuff to kind of theorize on. So a lot of stuff to hit today. It's a busy day and we're going to hit all of it. But first up, I knew the moment that I heard this soundbite yesterday, I was like, well, there's the start of the show. That was the first thing I thought of when I heard this yesterday. And his remarks came later, you know, after we were off air. And my first thought was, well, all right, this is how we're starting the show today, because here we have, again, people who don't understand how the economy works. So he's trying to, with this, they're trying to save him. He's trying to save himself on the economy, because the fact that he had to say this clearly shows you that Bidenomics is not working. Right? I mean, because he's like, well, I guess it's the companies that are doing it, guys. The reason everything's so expensive is the companies that are doing it. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, woof. The companies that are doing it. It's not because of inflation. It's not because of anything like that. It couldn't be because of my economic policies. It couldn't be because of any of those things. It's because those companies. That's what it was. I mean, this is one of the dumbest things I think I've heard a modern day president say. And when I remember again, when I was looking at this and I was seeing some of the reaction, of course, I think it got buried now after it went, because it was on the Hill at first, after it went viral. But some of the comments, people were like, yeah, that's right. It's the companies, those evil companies that are doing all this. Dude, are you okay? I broke Kane. We already broke him. It's only 9 minutes into the broadcast and we broke him already.
It hurts to know that people like that exist.
Did you read some of the comments under that video?
Yes, I did.
My brain broke.
Yes.
I died. I died and I came back to life only to be killed again. This is so bad. They're saying that inflation doesn't, you know, people think that inflation makes costs rise. Not necessarily. You can still have inflation and costs go down. I swear to you, that was a comment. I swear to you, hands to sky. Dude, we have an economic illiteracy in this show. Or not in the show, in this nation, sorry. In the country. The show is here to fix it. We have an economic illiteracy in the country. We're trying to fix it on the show. We're trying to help. We're trying to do our part. There are people who actually apparently don't understand the relationship between economic policy and then what that does to the market and how it affects people. I mean, you've had the overall prices, food's gone up over 20%. And generally, I'm not getting into, I know that some things have increased more than others, but food has gone up over 20%. Electricity skyrocketed, a 25% increase. I mean, this is all coming from, these are all government statistics, by the way. I mean, they make these things publicly available. But for him to say this, when he's like, well, inflation, you know, inflation has come down and the supply chains have been rebuilt. So it's the companies that are price gouging. That's not how that works. I mean, that is not how any of that works. So, and we're talking about the rate of increase, and the increase is still in existence. And it's because the price of goods, even the goods, I mean, you got to explain this like to Biden, you got to explain it baby talk, right? So when you're making a product, you have to acquire goods to make the product, correct? And the product that a manufacturer is making, that they have to get the ingredients, let's put it like that, to make that product. And the ingredients that they have to get to make that product come from another company. And their business is the ingredients that make a specific product. And guess what? Costs are up for them because costs are up for everything. Costs are up for energy. Costs are up for gas and oil and all of this other stuff. All of this combines and goes into it. He literally has no idea what he's talking about. I mean, this is terrifying. You can tell the man's never taken an Econ 101 class. These are the people who are making decisions in your government. They have no idea what's happening. I mean, it's appalling. It is absolutely appalling. Now, we're coming back to this because, golly, I have tons more on it. In addition, I just want to touch on the Bidens again. So what's the thing whenever they unveil, right, the White House Christmas decorations? And sidebar, I know some of you out there who are Republicans and who liked Trump, hated Melania Trump's Christmas decorations. I will fight you all day long. It was goth as all get out. I loved it. Those were the best Christmas decorations. I'm not going to hear it from nobody. They're like, well, it's great. I don't know what I think about it. You know what? They were cool. And they weren't this hokey stuff that they put up in the White House. Okay, right now, I digress. So they unveiled, you know how they have this big mantle in the White House? It's like in one of these reception areas. And what is it, for two Christmases, the past two Christmases, they put up stockings for all of the Biden grandchildren. And so it's the theme, and the mantle reflects that. The theme of the White House decorations is like the magic and wonder of Christmas, something stupid. And they had all this stuff on the mantle as well, but missing from the mantle were those stockings. Because they hung up six stockings. They have seven, but they have seven grandkids, but they only hung up six stockings. They had one stocking for each grandkid, except for five-year-old Lil Navy. That is Hunter Biden's daughter with that chick, London Roberts. And so the White House was asked about it because they were ratioed online when they posted a picture, when a picture came out of the mantle. And they got dragged for it. And then they ended up taking them down. It was so bad. And so they didn't even put any up this year. They would rather not put up any stockings of their grandkids than put up a stocking that has Lil Navy Jones' name on it. Screw you people. That is so evil. That is so lame. You're a grandparent and you can't accept your son's daughter that he had out of wedlock with a dalliance, this London Roberts lady, who seems like she's doing a good job of raising her. And I think she had to say a bunch of nice stuff to the press in order to settle with Hunter, by the way, but that's another point. But she had to drag that 50-something-year-old POS to court repeatedly to get him to pay child support and to get him to do his due diligence to the life that he helped create. And Joe and Jill can't even be prevailed upon to acknowledge her in the form of a stocking at Christmas. What does it cost them to have this little girl's name on a stocking and represented with all the other grandkids at Christmas? I think for a woman to not acknowledge a grandchild, you are cold hearted and I can't say it on air. And for the man to not do it, I mean, Joe Biden, I'm good grief. That's just despicable. That's not a family man. That's not an alpha man. That's not a patriarch. You're excusing your son, and then you're refusing to acknowledge the life that he helped create. I don't care what party affiliation you are. I have zero respect for people who do that. None. They are the lowest of the low, the scum of the earth for doing that. I mean, I call them white trash in the White House. I'm going to tell you what. I got some white trash kin, and they acknowledge everybody. The people in the White House, they don't. It's disgusting to me. I had to get that off my chest because we were not going to push through anymore in this show. I mean, how lame is it? What does it cost you to put your kid, the grandkid's name on a stocking? How much does that tell you about this family? They can't even do that much. So they don't have any stockings this year. They'd rather not have any of them. They'd rather not have any of them, no stockings at all. Now, what gets me, so they were asked about this. They were said, okay, so you're not going to have any stockings this year? The spokesperson said, quote, the family will be spending Christmas at Camp David, and their family's stockings will be there. Mm-hmm. That's right. Whether you can't see them and take pictures and ratio them on social media, they're going to be there, the stockings. I wish the reporter would have followed up with, well, why aren't they on the mantle this year? Because they were for two previous years. Is it because they got dragged because they won't put Navy Jones' name up there? Again, what is stopping them? I can't understand this. Do you any speculation? Can't you have any? I cannot understand this at all. None.
I want to know if little Navy's going to be on that mantle.
Oh, dude, you know she's not. They'd take a photo of it. They'd virtue signal off it so hardcore. That's so lame. So they just don't have any. They just don't have any. They don't have her not up on that mantle. They don't have anything up at all. That's so dumb. But that's says everything that you need to know. That's all it is. So they got the Christmas. They have statues of the family's first pets that are terrifying looking, as you know, pet statues typically are. Otherwise, you know, it's Christmas decorations. I mean, I just don't know why the media is not losing their mind on them. I mean, they have like a candy room and all this stuff. I don't know. It looks basic. It just looks like basic stuff. Where I thought that Melania Trump's I thought hers was edgy and cool looking. But, you know, what do I know? I guess I just don't know me no Christmas decorations. We gotta move on because there's other stuff I want to touch on. Coming up, a number of things. Did you guys hear the story of what Deadspin did? I'm going to have to come up with like a really ridiculous, goofy story to bring you back from the ledge once I share this story with you. So Deadspin, which is a garbage website, it's a repository of all things stupid. There's a dude who was over there who wrote this editorial where he went after this little kid who was, you know, he's a super fan. The kid's a super fan, right? So he's all decked out supporting the Kansas City Chiefs. And the dude dragged him saying that he was a racist and all this stuff. I don't even think the kid's 10. Not kidding you. We're going to talk about it. It wanted to incite a rage mob around this kid. And then he was proven wrong in his accusation. So we're going to talk about this because I guess nobody learned from the Nick Sandman case. I guess they never learned. I guess they never learned from it at all. So we're going to talk about all of that and more coming up.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Texas Governor Greg Abbott, apparently not satisfied with the drama that is an election, elections and running, you know, the Republic of Texas and the border, decided, you know what, I'm going to also go skydiving on top of it. He legit, but it was cool. He went with a World War II veteran. He went skydiving with a World War II veteran. He went near San Marcos. He went with Al Blaschke, a 106-year-old World War II veteran who's got probably more years of experience as a skydiver than you have living on Earth. And he first completed the feat. He broke a world record for becoming the oldest person to do a tandem parishute jump. And that was, I think, in 2017 he did that? So super awesome. Now, this was the governor's first skydiving experience. So he's been through it all now. Let's see. This is interesting. They say apocalyptic fears for the end of the world have sparked a perfect hotbed for global rise in exorcisms, is what they say. They say the number of performed exorcisms is that a thing that, like, I mean, I know they make movies about it, but is there like the office of, you know, running out the devil in the Catholic Church? Because it's like, I don't think they talk about it, but you got all these priests that, like, apparently where you got Russell Crowe just did a movie about a guy who was famous for it, right? Is there like an official office, like a department of running out the devil in the church, you know, and this is the undersecretary of running out the devil? I think it's because things are stressful and people are freaking out, I think is part of it. And also, evil's real. Let's see here. 60% of Americans say, yes, the money can buy happiness, and the price tag is $1.2 million. You think that until you don't have your health. People think that. They think that money will solve everything, and then, but you know what? Money cannot buy you health. It can buy healthy habits and like healthy food and things like that, but it can't buy you health. So people believe actually the magic number is 1.2 million to buy happiness. That's kind of sad, right? I mean, count your blessings, the existing blessings that you have. We got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. Don't miss.
A lot of big cities are having the problems of San Francisco, but it does feel like, Republicans, conservatives, they try to make that the avatar for what's wrong with Democratic policies. What is it about San Francisco? And also, those are very real problems that San Francisco has. Yeah. How do you even start to address them?
Well, I mean, first you own the issues, and then you start to address the issues. But look, they've been on a doom loop about San Francisco ever since Nancy Pelosi became Speaker.
Yeah.
I mean, this, remember, California's Nancy Pelosi's the Speaker
doom
of San
loop.
Francisco. You got Kamala Harris, who was a former senator from California. California's outperformed the American
doom
economy.
Doom loop sounds like a thrash metal band name for a bunch of cantankerous grammarists. That's what it sounds like. We got a little Donnie Hathaway playing there. Wink, wink, smile. Yeah. Little Donnie Hathaway. Shake a hand, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Christmas jam. So welcome back to the program, bottom of this hour. That's Gavin Newsom. That's your favorite Democrat mayor. He was on with, what's that dude's name? Seth? Seth Meyers. Can I just ask a question that's completely irrelevant to what we're about to discuss? Is he wearing velvet? Was he in a turtleneck or was that a velvet jacket? Because you shouldn't be wearing a velvet jacket unless you're at dinner or you're in a cigar bar. And does he have the sleeves pushed up? Like, what's up? Like, what is up with that? I'm just curious. Yeah, so I'm not Gavin Newsom. Yeah, Seth Meyers. Is that, I guess it's a jacket. I guess it's that stuck out to me. I think he's in a turtleneck. No.
Is that a turtleneck?
I don't like dudes in turtlenecks unless they're by the fire. Bothers me. Just a little thing. So Gavin Newsom, somebody gave him a Gen Z dictionary because he used the phrase doom loop. Somebody told him that. And I love the discussion that they're having. It's like, how dare you point out our crappy city? Like, literally, it's crappy. It's everywhere. I mean, they had a poop map, for crying out loud. Try to say that without, you know, elevating the vowels in that word. You can't. It's impossible. But when he says doom loop, or that they tried to use it as an avatar because it is. I mean, Gavin Newsom was mayor of San Francisco. The reason it is an avatar of Democrat policies. I mean, San Francisco was like the city, wasn't it, at some point, Kane?
Oh, yeah.
Like in the day, whenever that was. When was it? Back in the day. Ah, yes. BITD, back in the day. That's right. So it is the avatar of all of their policies. I mean, everything that they've wanted, all the gun control, all of the kittens and sunshine, let's have the open air drug markets or whatever, all this stuff, the needle exchanges, let's do the high taxation, let's do the high property taxes, the sales taxes, the business taxes, the tourist taxes, all the taxes, let's do all of it. It is the avatar and it's failed miserably. Now they're mad that you're pointing it out. Well, how dare you point out our failures? You can't do that. You can't use the example of one of the biggest and generationally run Democrat cities and use that as a comparison against a city that's actually responsibly run and has good fiscal policy. How dare thou? Well, that's called comparisons. That's what you do. They know it looks bad for them and that it compromises them, which is why they don't want that comparison. But you don't even have to. Okay, fine. You don't want San Francisco? Let's use Chicago. Let's use L.A. Let's use New York. Let's use Philly. Let's use St. Louis. Let's use Houston. Dallas, can't give me a city, any city.
You pretty much named them all.
Portland. Ooh, we could totally sub Portland in there. I mean, if San Francisco, if you're mad that it's the avatar, then I will pick another Democrat-run city, and they're all Democrat-run. I will pick another city for you. And we'll see how well that goes. It's just pretty fascinating. Yeah, he learned the phrase doom loop. What does that phrase actually mean, doom loop? You looked it up. It came into the modern parlance of our time, what, last year? A year ago?
Yeah. So according to Investopedia, this is back in October of 2022, that a doom loop describes a situation in which one negative action or factor triggers another, which in turn triggers another negative action or causes the first negative factor to worsen.
I mean, I've heard of doom scrolling.
And the cycle continues.
I hate the language. We're just dumbing everything down so badly. doom scrolling. I've heard of that doom loop. So a bunch of negative things, you're not allowed to point those out. We're not in the doom loop. They are literally in a doom loop.
Exactly.
I mean, you have the first doom of the feces everywhere, and then that loops into the needles everywhere, and then that loops into the crime everywhere, and then that loops into the high taxes everywhere, and that loops into, nobody can buy any property anywhere, and that loops into people are fleeing the state. It's bad. Steve is dying because of what he put in Slack. Go ahead. Do it.
Doom poop.
There you go. I could see him over there fidgeting. I was like, uh-oh. I look over in Slack, and there it is, right there. Not unlike San Francisco. Then he also said this. This is the second part of Gavin Newsom's. I guess he thought he was cool by going on a late night show that only grandparents watch, but okay. Audio soundbite 5, seal to play.
And I think we need to assert ourselves. We got to be more assertive. And frankly, Republicans, man, they've been defining the terms CRT, DEI, ESG. No one even understands what these things mean. And we're on the defense.
You made them up.
They think the most important issue for our kids is drag shows and trans issues, not gun violence in this country. I mean, on all of these issues, we're on the right side. We just not need to get on the other side of our anxiety and doubts and go on the offensive.
Okay, so you know what those letters mean because you literally made them up. Your side made them up. Let's start with CRT, Critical Race Theory, Frankfurt School of Marxism. This goes all the way back to Derrick Bell in the 60s. And that's why in 2012, when I first wrote the story about Derrick Bell and Barack Obama and how Barack Obama it was basically a mentoree of Derrick Bell. That's why it was so big, because he was mainstreaming critical race theory, which was supplanting identitarian politics, identity politics for the fiscal warfare, the economic socioeconomic statuses that you would always see divide everyone. They were supplanting the identity politics for that. It's still the same formula. It's just a different variable. And they were mainstreaming that throughout college campuses all beginning in the 60s. So that's something that y'all came up with. Like, y'all literally wrote books and called it critical race theory. We didn't come up with that. You all did. We're busy people. Like, we're trying to like pay taxes that you keep inventing and, you know, working and raising kids. We don't have time to keep track of all your alphabet creations. And then there's DEI. And you guys came up with DEI. We didn't do that. That's not something that conservatives sit around and think about. Kane, how can we do diversity? What does it even mean anymore? Diversity, exclusion, and idiocy. How can we do that? How can we create that and implement that in all of our workplaces? You know what, Kane? You know what we need to have for the show? We should have a diversity officer to make sure that we have diverse ammo and, you know, coffee blends.
I see. So,
and liquor.
223-556. Make sure we have 9 mil.
Yeah.
Like a variety.
Yeah, like a variety. I feel like that's like truly representative of America today, you know. But his last little quip there, when he says, you know, they're focusing on drag shows and the big thing and not gun violence. Well, first off, the presupposition is that gun violence is the number one killer of kids across the country. And as we've talked about, it actually isn't. The only way that the CDC can get that figure is that they inflate it all the way up to they reduced it to 19. It used to go up to 20, you know, 20-year-old babies, but it goes up to 19. They include 18 and 19-year-olds. When you break down all the FBI uniform crime reports going all the way back to 99 up until current time, what you find out is that the majority of those crimes, particularly with illegally possessed handguns, it's all 18 and 19-year-olds, and it's all drug and gang violence. Now, when it concerns minors, it's still drug and gang violence. And then when you remove all of those variables out of when you remove all of those numbers, all of those cases specifically out of the minor age group, then it drops down to like fifth or sixth place. And drownings and automobile accidents and accidental poisoning and really opioid crisis, all of that stuff takes precedent. But they include the drug and gang violence of 18 and 19-year-olds to overwhelmingly drive that statistic so they can use that as the basis for more gun control policy. So you have that on one hand, but then the other hand, too, is something that you just brought up. I mean, if you're really concerned about the lives of kids, why in the ever-loving world are you letting all these repeat offenders out reoffending over and over and over again? I mean, the superintendent of the Chicago PD said just a few years ago, it's the same 1,400 people that are driving 89% of the violent crime in Chicago, and the police were disheartened because they keep arresting the same people over and over again. I mean, they're literally on a first-name basis with these people. They know the criminals. They're on a first name basis with the criminals. They know the criminals' family. I mean, it's like a cartoon. They know these people so well, and they just keep catching them because they keep reoffending, and then they get out. They get a wrist slap, and then they're out on probation. This happens all the time. And here's something else. If they really cared about the lives of kids, then why would you not include, why would you not make sure that you have a mandatory maximum for a lot of these young violent offenders? Like that Vonderette Myers case in St. Louis. Y'all remember this? This is a case of a kid. This dude was 14 years old. He already had a juvie record that was multiple pages long, violent record. And he was supposed to be, it was like a quasi-house arrest. He was supposed to be in his house when the sun went down. He wasn't supposed to be out and about. He had an ankle monitor on, and there was an off-duty, plainclothes police officer who, and this was, what was this, in Tower Grove Park? Off-duty, plainclothes police officer who happened to be walking by a known drug house and he saw Vonderette Myers and saw his ankle brace going in and tried to follow up on it. Vonderette Myers turned around, shot at the cop. The cop returned fire and killed him. Vonderette Myers was able, they let him out without nothing. What was it, like 10% of 1% of his bond to get out for a felonious activity when in reality he should have actually, I wrote a whole bunch about it at the time, he should have actually been in jail. He should have been detained at that point. And the fact that they didn't, because they thought it was more merciful to let him out in the street to get killed than it was to keep him detained in jail where he'd still be alive today. That's what your restorative justice gets you. Restorative justice kills more kids than anything else. And that's what Gavin Newsom supports. That's the epidemic that's plaguing youth today. And his party is the number one driver of it. So I would love for someone to challenge him that on a debate stage. But, you know, you got to kind of know this stuff a little bit beyond getting the Gen Z dictionary of doom loop. So dumb. These people are walking doom loops. So that's we're already winding down to the bottom of this first hour. I got to do something first before. So you guys remember when I did the amazing Renaissance drawing of Cain? So hold up. The belief is that if Hunter Biden can spit through a straw, well, at least he's not snorting. Spit through a straw and create $500,000 art pieces. Million. Yeah. And sell those, then the thought was, well, prove to me that this is not Nepo baby stuff. And I will draw. My stuff is better. So I drew one. It's a Renaissance portrait of Cain. I mean, this could go for millions of dollars. This is, I mean, look, I even included the crosshatch that I learned in junior high art school. I put my skills to use. Look at your background, dude.
It's great.
Look at the background.
It's like diamond plate.
Note, right, isn't it? Note the detail on the name. I mean, there's so much care in this. Look how much I like shaded it. His lip.
You know, the biggest sales pitch for me is the fact that there's no spit on it.
No spit. There's no spit on this at all.
Right.
It's a Sharpie. No spit.
I think it makes it worth more when there's no spit on it.
Yeah.
That's just me.
And then I added the little fun brought to you by probiotics because he never shuts up about it. So I put that at the bottom. I mean, this, if you compare this to what Hunter Biden does, you don't even know, what does that look like? It looks like a Petri dish. It looks like he dropped his crack pipe in a Petri dish, and then that's what came up of it. Yeah. There's a face on it. He's got his cans. See his eyebrows? You can't see if you're listening, but the simulcast.
Cans are just your headphones. Slang for headphones.
Headphones, yeah. Yeah, I probably should have, like, clearly articulated that, didn't I? Just now realized. You know, so, I mean, this is the million-dollar piece. So I was thinking about, like, what's the best way to do it? So I asked Lorraine, I said, hey, get me a list of people in the YouTube chat. And I'm just going to, like, I'll print their names out and I'll just, like, I put it up or number them and then we'll just, like, randomly pick a number. So I did that. I don't know if the YouTube chat was aware of it. So she got me the names and numbered them. And then it was number 16. I randomly picked the individual that I picked. They go by the name of Kraken. And yeah, so they're going to get the user. Because, you know, people can't use their real names anymore because the FBI is going to, that now they've been expanded, they're going to come get you. So the user Kraken in the YouTube chat is going to get this $1 million Renaissance painting or drawing with the Sharpie. So that is the individual. Their name is Kraken. They are a regular participant in the chat, and I'm going to send this to them.
Let me be the first to say
Kraken.
Congratulations.
That is such a dad joke, but I'll let it slide because you said it so nicely for my Renaissance portrait that I did. I
appreciate that. Thank you.
So, I mean, this is like going to be in a museum, Kane, later. You're going to be like the Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, what is he thinking?
I don't know. You may be exaggerating a little bit.
Are you saying that I am not as good as Hunter Biden?
I'm just saying that piece may not end up in a museum. So
you don't think you have art taste, sir. I went to the Uffizi one time, so now I'm an expert.
Your talent is superb, though.
Yeah. So congratulations to Kraken. You're going to get this beautiful, beautiful, show it one more time, Renaissance portraiture.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Individual patients' lives as well as money. So I want to thank you all for taking the time to be here. I want to thank my my introducer. I know you're down to 35, but it's going to get down to $2,000 a year. Max, 2035. So God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you very, very much.
He stands like a toy soldier from a Nutcracker, like this, and then he squints. And he just stays in that perpetual position. And then he's hunched over like a shrimp on a martini glass with some cocktail sauce in it. He's just like hunched over like this. And he's makes me want a shrimp cocktail, actually. Right. It's getting close to lunchtime. Starting to get a little hungry. All right. So coming up in our second hour, I don't know what's happening. No, coming up in our second hour, have you seen that Civil War? The Civil War movie, the new modern Civil War. It's made by people who literally have never been in the wilderness, have never left like an urban area. They have no clue. It's one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. We got to make fun of it egregiously because that's what we're good at. And then Stephen Moore is going to join us later on in the program as well. Back in just a moment. If you go somewhere, communism wins.
Republicans are weaponizing this addiction and using it to attack President Biden, a man of decency and integrity. Frankly, it's one of, if not the most despicable things I've seen in my whole career here in Congress.
How dare you take advantage of this sweet infant baby's problem to go after President Daddy Showers? How dare thou? That is the strong argument from Democrat Representative Jim McGovern, ladies and gentlemen. He says, you dirty Republicans are weaponizing baby infant hunters addiction to attack a man of decency and integrity. I mean, you know, if decency and integrity mean grifting and fleecing a nation to enrich yourself while also enriching their biggest geopolitical foe, I mean, words have no meaning anymore. Welcome back to the program. Top of the second hour, Dana Loesch here with you. I mean, this was a glaring, glaring lie from Jim McGovern, almost as bright as the glare given by his giant bald dome. But I don't think this helps, because it just looks as though you're making excuses for this family. That's what it looks like. You're making excuses for them. That's privilege. People don't like that, especially when they see other people get busted for less. They don't like it. So we got some issues here. We got some issues. Now, earlier, we played the audio of Hunter Biden saying that, well, I'm here. They've been saying, where's Hunter? Well, here I am. And then he hurriedly got into his SUV and drove away. He did not show up for the deposition before closed doors of Congress today, to which he had received a congressional subpoena. Now, the process, the standard operating procedure of these is that the individual meets with Congress, with the committee, talks to them behind closed doors before the public hearing, which Republicans had already said they were going to do and they were going to put on the calendar. They're just doing how it always has gone. Even during the Kavanaugh hearing, individuals who were brought forward that were going to testify publicly, they met with Democrats behind closed doors to give a deposition first. I mean, this is just standard. And this is how it literally has always worked since Congress's founding, since its creation. And the Biden family wants to act like this is a brand new thing that somehow Republicans were not moving in good faith when this is just literally the same thing that even Biden himself, when he was in the Senate, the same thing that happened when he was in a lower elected office. It's an excuse from them. They don't want to answer questions. So now what is to happen is that the House committee has to take a vote as to whether or not they're going to find him in contempt of court. Because while it's, you know, Congress isn't a court, the subpoena that was issued has the full weight of, I mean, it's a legally issued subpoena. You can't just ignore them. And whether or not they're going to, whether or not he's going to respond to that, and if they find him in contempt, like they did with Sloppy Steve and Peter Navarro, then it's the U.S. attorney, I believe, that Biden had, a Biden-appointed attorney, I think, and then takes the steps and issues the charge. And I don't know why Hunter Biden should get to skate on this if no one else has done and been able to skate on it. They want to act like it's a witch hunt, but it's a witch hunt. A witch hunt would somehow mean that this was all undertaken by Republicans when it was the suspicious financial activity report that their own family members kicked off when they were laundering money through all these different shell companies, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. And that's what kicked off the suspicious financial activity report investigation from the banks. It made the banks take notice. That wasn't Republicans. That was the banking institution that took notice and launched an investigation. And then from there, criminality was discovered, undeclared taxes, all of this other stuff, which only made them look more. And then the laptop came to actually the whistleblowers came out because they wanted to get away from this and throw them under the bus. And then the laptop came out, and then the receipts on the laptop corroborated everything that they were that the whistleblowers had said. That is the chain of events that has happened. And so it's not anything but what this family has done to themselves. They acted with such reckless impropriety that they called down the investigation on themselves. And so, you know, I mean, this indictment was going long before. This has been underway for the investigation into his financial activities and the related activities of the family, because the family's names, some of these 20 some odd shell accounts had Joe Biden's name on it, Jill Biden's name on it, uncles, cousins. I mean, it was crazy. The whole family was involved in the grift because they're a bunch of trash. That's why. Crazy. All right. I want to switch gears here. I noted this last night. I think we have this audio. Let me pull this up, because can we play audio soundbite 19? Now, first, I like Dana White. I don't dislike him. I like UFC. There's certain fighters that I like. I don't watch it as much as my husband does, but because he likes the skill of fighting, whereas I get involved in the story and the drama of it because I'm a chick. But they were talking about Bud Light with Tucker Carlson. Now, Bud Light just dropped, $106 million? Is that what it was? Is that what the figure was?
I think so.
They dropped a ton of cash. It's like one of the biggest, I think it's like one of the biggest sponsorship deals in UFC's history. It was a record sponsorship deal that they made. So they've rejoined UFC. They used to be with UFC, but they rejoined with UFC. And this is, I mean, it is a massive, I think it was like $106 billion or million dollars. Sorry. It was a lot. $105 million a year sponsorship deal.
Yes.
$105 million a year. So this was after, this deal was made after the whole Dylan Mulvaney thing. Now, if you remember with Dylan Mulvaney, you had Anheuser-Busch, which was bought out by InBev. You had Anheuser-Busch. Their whole marketing team was like, yeah, this sounds like a good idea. Let's do it. And they had worked with Dylan Mulvaney for a digital influencer campaign. And that's what made everybody mad in the first place. That's what started all of it. And so then they like kept doubling down on it, and they never apologized. They kind of reshuffled some things, but they never said that, you know, which literally was the most basic thing that you had to do. So that's it. So after all of that, then they're trying to rehabilitate themselves. And so they bought a $105 million a year sponsorship deal with UFC. And so now everyone had been boycotting Bud Light, all this stuff. And now here's Dana White on this. Listen.
Let me tell you what, if you consider yourself a patriot, right? You're a patriot. You should be drinking gallons of Bud Light. Believe me when I tell you.
Wait. I should be boycotting Bud Light.
Gallons of Bud Light. You should have Bud Light drums stacked up in your garage and drinking it right out of the keg. They are way more aligned with you than most of these other beer companies are. That I guarantee you. Take it from somebody who's in the know, who does business with beer companies. You are way more aligned with Bud Light than you are with
so I'm
any
a,
other
yeah,
beer
I disagree
company.
With that, because we're going to talk to a guy behind a beer company coming up who's way more aligned. Yeah, you know. I think he's kind of joking a little bit. I hope so. But
he's paid for the messaging.
I don't dislike Dana White. I like Dana White. But you're getting paid, dude. You got bought. That's not a victory. You surrendered to a check. You surrendered to a check. Just be honest about this, right? Let me tell you something. No one wants to destroy Bud Light. And why is it patriotic to drink a damn Belgian company's beer? You know they're not an American company, right? They were bought out by InBev. That's a Belgian-based company. Ask me how I know this. Grew up in St. Louis, lived two blocks from the brewery. I fed a damn Clydesdale. And we talked about this yesterday. So they're a Belgian company. It's not even an American company. So I don't know. I don't think that you judge patriotism by how much crappy foreign beer you drink. In fact, I know you don't judge patriotism by how much crappy foreign beer you drink. Secondly, no one's doing this to Bud Light. No one is doing this to them. They messed up. And then they kind of just tried to shuffle it around and think that you were going to forget about it. Literally, like I said, no one wants to hurt a company. No one wants to hurt anybody's job. That's what makes the right different from the left, or at least most of the people on the right. I wrote a whole book about this, literally, called Grace Canceled. To have a pathway to reconciliation, to redemption and reconciliation, starts with one step. Your acknowledgement of wrong, which includes saying, hey, we messed up. Sorry about that. Particularly to the ladies, the conservative ladies, who were really like, really, you're going to do us like this, Bud Light? You're going to do us like this. And I appreciated all of these strong alpha dudes who stood up and were like, no, you're not going to do our ladies like this. You're not going to allow this guy to make a mockery of who our ladies are by cosplaying as a chick. You're not doing this. I really appreciated them standing up. And every other conservative chick I know felt this feels the same way. Because that's how we viewed it. We viewed it as it's nice to see men stand up. We like that. That's hot. We liked when they did it. I don't like this. Because all they had to do, all Bud Light had to do, was say, ladies, we're sorry. We messed up. I joked about having like an ad campaign, like, you know, having like an old school, you know, thinking like Tawny Katane on the White Snake car kind of video. I was even joking about that. All they had to do was come out and say, ladies, we're sorry. We messed up. We didn't mean to have a dude cosplay as you. You're more than that. That's all. They literally just had to say, ladies, we're sorry. That's it. No one's calling for bust anybody's kneecaps. We weren't calling for anybody to lose their jobs. I never called for anybody to be fired. We never called for any of this stuff. This is literally the most basic B thing you can do is just say, sorry. Why is that so hard for some people to understand? And then they act like because it's unresolved, it's the fault of the ladies who were offended by a dude cosplaying as a woman. All they had to do, this company, was say sorry. That's it. And $105 million does not translate into an apology. $105 million. If you're going to fight the culture war like this, you might as well just surrender now. This was not a victory. This was a surrender. This was a sellout, a sold out, a bought. That's what this was. And it wasn't just a white flag. It was a check that was waving in the air. I'm all for business, believe. I'm all for capitalism, believe. But I'm not for telling people that the culture war, oh, this battle was won because we got paid and they didn't even give you the respect of apologizing with that check. Did they even write we're sorry in the memo part? I bet they didn't. So that's not a victory. That's an L. All they had to do was say sorry. You know what would have been super cool is if like a condition of this deal, take your $105 million. I'm not going to begrudge you making money. But it would have been super, super alpha for them to go, you know what? And an apology for the ladies. That would have been cool. That didn't happen. Disappointed on both counts. So no, it doesn't change things for me. It doesn't change things for a lot of other people. And I don't know why people act like a simple apology is rocket science. But that's the first step on a pathway to reconciliation. We didn't do this to them. They did it to themselves.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So there were eight countries that joined the U.S. and Israel in opposing this U.N. resolution on Gaza. 10 countries, including the U.S. and Israel, opposed this resolution that called for a ceasefire in Gaza that was overwhelmingly passed by the United Nations General Assembly, the thuggery cabal, on Tuesday. They passed it 153 in favor, 10 opposed, 23 absentees, called for an immediate ceasefire. What are they going to do about it? Not a damn thing. No, I think, no, we don't need a ceasefire. We need a more fire. More fire. That's what I think. Moving on here. So Marjorie Stoneman Douglas School, as you know, they've been dealing, they've always dealt with assaults, fights, things like that. This predates the massacre that took place. And in fact, they got famous for the superintendent at that school actually stopped reporting felonious assaults and other criminality because they wanted to lower the statistics of those incidents so that their superintendent literally could win an award from then Department of Education head Arnie Duncan under Obama Biden. Well, now new videos come out showing a horrifying moment that a student at MSD was slammed under the concrete on his head in a brutal brawl. So apparently it is still ongoing, the problem with assaults and fighting and all of that there. Let's see here. Delta passengers were stranded at a remote military base after their flight was diverted to Canada. I guess there's not going to be like any vending machines or anything. They got stranded there, more than 200, remote Canada wilderness for over 21 hours after a Delta flight going from Amsterdam to Detroit experienced a mechanical issue. They had to make an emergency landing. Thankfully, everybody was safe. They went to Goose Bay Airport in Newfoundland, Canada, 270 people, so really almost 300 on board. They said that it had to do with one of the plane's engines. They had to urgently make the landing. This was the only place that had a long runway that made landing this size jet possible. And they wanted to figure out how to land safely first and then deal with everybody out there. So they didn't get to eat. I understand that they were upset that they didn't get, but they arrived safely. So that's, I think, what's the most important thing, right?
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
I love his guitar tone in that track. I love the way that all sounds, but that guitar tone, that's so warm and just so, it's just awesome. That's a new track called The Man from our very good friend, John Rich. You know him, obviously, big and rich. Founder Redneck Riviera, Old Glory Bank. I mean, he's got the bar, he's got the money, he's got the music, he's a platinum music factory. I mean, for the love. And he joins us via Skype from Nashville. Good to see you, my friend. God bless you. I like all the stuff that you do. I mean, I really do enjoy your work. You got me into country music. You really did. You and Waylon got me into country music. I love the tone on. I love the way the guitar sounded. I mean, this is a beautiful track, The Man, and it's about your grandfather who served in World War II. I mean, here we're on the heels of Veterans Day, going into Thanksgiving, the holiday, and you had a veteran from every major conflict that was in this video. How long did this concept take to pull off?
Yeah, so wrote the song, like you said, about my grandfather, and it, you know, it dawned on me that every American has somebody's picture hanging in their house, or it's in an old one of those old grandma style photo books of your grandfather, your great grandfather. That served in these wars. And so I wanted to write a song called The Man. So The Man to me, yeah, it's my granddaddy, but The Man to you is somebody in your family. Mm. And so this song was meant to honor all of them and remind Americans whose shoulders we stand on, what true American greatness really does look like, because that's why they call them the greatest generation. So in this video, yes, I was able to gather together veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraqi Freedom, and Desert Storm, all in the same room. The three World War II guys that you'll see in the video, you can find it on Rumble, find it on YouTube. Two of them were over 100 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And the guy that was the oldest, he was 102, served in the Army. I said, well, sir, if you ever were called to defend your country again, would you be willing to do it? And he looked at me and he says, well, I'm not too mobile, but I can still shoot.
There you go.
That was his answer.
I love it.
And you could just see that fire up in that old man just at the thought of having a chance to defend his country or fight for his country.
That's why
I put the song out. Yeah, I felt it was time to put that one out.
Tell me a little bit about your grandfather's service as well, because I feel like everybody, especially in our generation, everybody has, it's all our grandparents served. I mean, we had grandparents in our family in one side of the world and the other side of the world. One was on the beaches of Normandy and the other was in the Pacific on the USS Alabama. And it is amazing how that's like a common thread throughout so many in our generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same in my family. So the granddaddy that I wrote the song about, he was in the Pacific. He actually lied about his age.
Yeah,
got in when he was 17. You got to think back then, you know, these guys at a 17-year-old kid, they were not kids at 17 in the late 30s, early 40s. They were grown-ass men.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were tough. They were ready to go. And he was so upset about all the dead bodies that were coming back to his hometown in Glasgow, Kentucky, that he said, I got to go. I mean, I got to get over there. And so he got in and he went over. He was hooked on morphine for 2 years when he got back home. You know, they didn't have any... PTSD was alive and well back then, too. You know, my other grandfather served in fighting the Nazis. He lived to be 81, and he actually committed suicide from his PTSD in his 80s.
Wow.
Okay? They never got over it. He got to sleep in a separate bedroom from my grandmother from the time he came back from the war till the day he died. So these people, they are the reason we still have a country to even argue about at this point in 2023. And I think because especially our young people in this country, Dana, are so far removed from the greatest generation. They don't know anybody that fought in that war. They've never been around anybody that was alive then. To them, it's just like something in a history book. They have no real touchstone to it. So this song was my attempt at putting you in the moment of what it was like for a guy in that time period to sign up and go fight for his country.
It's a beautiful song. We're talking to our good friend John Rich, and you can find his track The Man all over the internet as well. You know, I want to ask you about, I love the Veterans Day and Thanksgiving are always right by each other. We're getting ready to roll into Thanksgiving. We were just having a conversation about the Thanksgiving Day parade, how, you know, I grew up in my grandparents' little tiny house in the Ozarks. I grew up watching that. My grandma would wake up early in the morning, and as soon as I'd hear the announcers as a little kid, I knew, oh, pies are going in the oven. Like, I knew I got to get out there and help. And I grew up with it, but it's kind of changed. Like, I can't even have it. We don't have any little kids in our house anymore, but I wouldn't be able to have it on, I think, the way that it is now, and especially with some of the agenda that they're pushing. Do you think that society misses that nostalgia? I wonder that, because it seems like the outrage at this stuff, there's like a petition about some of this, like 17,000 signatures already. I kind of wonder, it sort of feels like the pendulum is swinging the other way, and people are just, maybe it's because things are so uncertain, they're craving nostalgia, they're craving some of that old school stuff. Do you get that same sense? Because you're right there on the tip of the arrow with that stuff, with culture mm-hmm. and entertainment.
Yeah, I think what people are craving is something concrete, something foundational, something that does not change. And when you see the world changing daily, day by day, and not for the better, and it gets further and further out there where you can't even let your kids watch network television anymore for fear of how they're going to be indoctrinated. I think people want to get back to the basics of God, family, country, leave my family alone. Let's make a pecan pie and watch the parade and the big balloons and have Thanksgiving and be an American. Yeah. And the further out we get from that, the more sick people get. Why do we have such a depression issue in our country right now? Because all the things that you could count on are being vilified and done away with. So the things that you can't count on that are constantly moving and morphing into whole new viruses, in my opinion, everybody's been infected with it. They're sick of it. So it's really up to us, though, Dana. In your house, you can still do it exactly how you want to do it.
Amen.
You can still cook your pie. You can still go out in the backyard and pitch horseshoes and build a campfire. You can still raise your kids like you want to. Just turn their nonsense off and get back to being a real American.
Amen to that. I got to ask you before I let you go, talking with our good friend John Rich, and you can find him on Twitter. You can also make sure you get that Redneck Riviera, which we have as part of our Thanksgiving. You know, you put a little cinnamon in that. You make it fall-esque. You can make it like a Thanksgiving drink. How do y'all celebrate Thanksgiving? What's a Rich family do?
Well, so my Granny Rich, who passed away in 2020, she was always the one. She'd be in there smoking Marlboros and frying chicken. She never really did the
that
turkey
is
thing.
Old
it was fried
school.
Chicken.
Yes.
I mean, standing over a cast iron yep. skillet with an ash about that long, and she's in there flipping that
yep.
chicken. So we have all of her recipes, so we all get together, and we recreate Granny's food as best as we can. Every Thanksgiving, we set a picture of her up by the stove there, and then we go out and shoot some skeet, and we build a little campfire, and we give thanks for our country and for our family and for our health and for all the things that we forget to give thanks about most every day. We still got a lot to be thankful for.
Amen to that. Well, it's a beautiful song. I love that you do this. I love that you honor these veterans and that you brought all of this in for a really beautifully done video. You've been busy because this is like the second real awesome video that you put out, what, like in 2 months? Like you're like a factory. You're just,
yeah.
I mean, and they look so great. We're blessed to have you. We're blessed to have you out there fighting the good fight in the culture war, because that's really where it starts. John Rich, and you can find the song on Rumble. You can find it on YouTube. And the song is called The Man, the song in the video. Happy Thanksgiving to you, my friend. God bless you. Appreciate all that you do and have done on behalf of this country and our vets. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for always having my back.
Of course. You know it. You know it. Appreciate it. Talk to you again soon. Take care. We have more to come, folks. We're already at the bottom of this second hour. It is a great song, and it's a really beautifully done track. He made a really good point there too about the PTSD that a lot of these our grandparents had. I don't know if they dealt with it because they just never they dealt with it by never talking about it, because out of all of the older generation, like our grandparents' generation that I knew, everybody was in. I mean, literally everybody was in the war. They never spoke about it. The only time that my grandpa ever talked about it, and I recorded him, was after he had already gotten this terminal diagnosis, and he was explaining, because we found out when he was in the VA that he had been exposed to like a massive amount of radiation. Apparently it was fallout from one of the bombs at the end of World War II over in the Pacific. And it like morphed it. They like wrote this huge paper about him. He had like a very, it was terminal, but it was very long lasting. Terminal cancer is a very aggressive cancer. But yet at the same time, he just kind of had it. It ended up like changing. It was wild. But he never talked about it until then. And then he explained some of what he saw and what he experienced. He was a gunner on the USS Alabama. So he did the big old 50 cals that were there along the side. And that was without ear pro, without eye pro. I mean, no wonder I think he was selectively hard of hearing, if I'm being honest. Like when he was done hearing you, he would turn you off. And when all the women would get together and cluck, 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 he'd just turn it off. But every now and then he'd hear and he'd weigh in on something. But he was always very gentle in nature and spirit. And he was an encourager, but he was very gentle. And I think that he really devoted himself more to that when he came back from the war. Not that he was ever a hellraiser, but I just from everything that I've heard from his siblings, you know, my great aunts and uncles, he really was a lot calmer, I think by choice, because of everything that he saw overseas. But man, it is just as a different generation. I'm so glad he did this. And like I said, you can find that all on social. You can find it YouTube Rumble as well. We got Florida Man on the way.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Man, what do people try to do? What do you think is going to happen here? All right, so a Florida man tried to dump fentanyl down the drain during a drug bust, say deputies. Daytona Beach. A man was arrested after he attempted to dispose of fentanyl down his kitchen sink during the execution of a search warrant. When Volusia County deputies arrived at the home, they found 42-year-old Eddie Shine. Now, there's a drug dealer's name if ever I heard one. Eddie Shine. Trying to throw fentanyl down a sink. They've been investigating him for several months now, and they said he's involved for drug sales throughout the southeast Volusia County area. During the warrant execution, they found 38 grams of fentanyl, powdered fentanyl, in a kitchen cabinet. And along with fentanyl and a separate fentanyl and water mixture that was in the kitchen sink plumbing. He was charged with trafficking fentanyl, renting a structure for trafficking fentanyl, destruction of said fentanyl because it's evidence, resisting arrest without violence, and possession of drug paraphernalia. His bond is over $2.5 million. dang. I mean, what'd you think you were going to do that they weren't going to find you getting, trying to stuff that down the sink? Good grief. I have one of the grossest headlines that I'm not going to read here because it had to do with a guy in a public causeway being engaging in voyeuristic activities.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so we're just going to go past that one.
Thank you.
Oh, and I... okay, let me do this one. Just let me let you know, there's a lot in old naked Florida man headlines. Just can say there's like an inordinate amount of them right now. So this 68-year-old Florida man got naked in Naples. That's a horrible, horrible Hallmark movie. Threw his clothes into the bay and then led police in a pursuit and then ran into a restaurant, sat down naked at an empty table, then ran out of the restaurant, ran down the street, and then he finally got caught. He was busy. Yeah. Stephen Grant Campbell. This sounds like a toddler avoiding a bath. This is what this sounds like, doesn't it? Except he's an old man and it's gross. He threw all his shoes and his clothes into Naples Bay. Officers saw it happen and they're like, stop, Florida man, stop. And he's like, no. So he ran to Bistro 821, took his seat all naked at an empty table. Ew, I hope they washed that chair. They said a witness says he literally, and then he didn't stop at the restaurant. He ran down the street where he paused briefly to expose himself to everybody at Fifth Avenue and 11th Street South. And then he kept running. And then the law finally caught up with him and he was charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and cited for littering. I guess that's the clothes in the bay. The littering. Oh my gosh. I don't know. There's a Florida man with all gas, no brakes tattoo who was arrested after, guess what? Losing control of the car.
Wow.
I know. That's real shocking.
Surprise.
Yeah. Polk County, Florida, a man and a woman were arrested early yesterday morning. They were running from police. They crashed their car. Timothy Allen Hogue and Rebecca Kozub are suspects in a string of car burglaries. They were spotted in a small residential. They plowed right into this other vehicle. I mean, full speed. That's insane. They were spotted by deputies. They went off at a high rate of speed. Then they crashed right into a parked car. They had to be pulled from the wreck. The guy had on his neck. It was a neck tat right in the front. All gas, no brakes. They're totally in jail. As one might imagine, they're in jail. Let's see. This is a different fentanyl story. A Florida man was found with enough fentanyl to kill 60,000 people.
Whoa.
This is insane. That's 60,000. That's because it's like how many grams? There's like, I mean, I don't even. This
They're
is
like
a thousand.
Nanograms.
This guy
nanograms.
Had a. Oof. This guy had 1,000 fentanyl pills. Esteban Perez Jr. He got pulled over the weekend. He failed to stop when he turned into a road. And as they were conducting the traffic stop, they're like, why do you smell like a bunch of pot plants all at once? And Collier County said that they conducted a search. They found 987 fentanyl pills, plus meth, synthetic cannabinoid, and all kinds of narcotic paraphernalia. Oh, my gosh. He's totally in jail. Totally in jail. And his bond's real high, too. Stick with us. Third hour on the way. Don't miss.
The Dana Show.
It would be the Hollaback girl that they would play, and all that was like the cue for all of the bougie bridesmaids who are half drunk to get on the dance floor. Nobody could spell bananas, and I would just watch most entertained. It's the same thing. All this pretend compassion for these people, where the hell was this in the days and weeks leading up to this? Where was this the last 11,000 times that they violated a ceasefire agreement?
The Dana Show.
Why won't you take responsibility now?
I've already addressed that many times. And I said this whole question will be addressed after the war.
Why
just
not
as people
now?
Would ask. Well, did people ask Franklin Roosevelt after Pearl Harbor that question? Did people ask George Bush after the surprise attack of November 11th? Look, it's a question that needs to be asked.
He's not. I mean, I think that was a good answer, actually, that he gave. I mean, sure, people are definitely going to ask the question of what's up. But, you know, how did that happen? But. I think his answer there was, that was a quite a good answer. Welcome back to the show. It's, I can't, is it really hour three?
It is.
Wait, what trickery is this? Dana Lash here with you. Top of our third hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast of the radio show as well on YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. So, the question of intelligence, they'll absolutely, I mean, they will know. I mean, obviously, they'll try to figure out what ended up happening. I do have the question of how did all those reporters from the AP and CNN and all of that and Reuters that were apparently riding on the back of Hamas bikes holding grenades, how did they know all of this stuff was happening, but intelligence agencies didn't? I do have that question. I think it's a completely legitimate question to ask. It's not mean. You want to know. But at the same time, is it shocking that a terrorist that has repeatedly attacked Israel is going to attack? I mean, come on. They're a terrorist group. They don't want to live in peace. No peace for them. They want none. I mean, that's basically what they were protesting when they were in London for the Remembrance Day. All those pro-Hamas protesters out there. We got to talk about some 2024 stuff. You have Tim Scott that dropped out. I think Vivek Ramaswamy's got to go. And I think Chris Christie has got to go. I think they have to go because they're just drags anymore. They really are. Someone was floating the idea of Vivek Ramaswamy being RNC chair. I just think that maybe you want to have voted Republican more than like one time and haven't given a bunch of money to Democrats before you start running the RNC. That's true. You can feel free to go find it on my Substack, chapter and verse, where I included screenshots of all the hashtag receipts. So I just think that that's kind of a bad idea. I do think my original assessment of Nikki Haley in this race was that she was running to be VP. I stand by that assessment. I still think that that is true. Case in point, a friend of mine had noted, let me pull this up, that the whole, like, she's only apparently mentioned Trump one time in 2 months. In 2 months, she's only mentioned Trump once. Now, I'm not saying that you have to go out and constantly, you know, like go and attack Trump base. I'm just saying, if you are running to be president, wouldn't you go after the front runner, the perceived front runner? Wouldn't you go after that person? Now, I've told everyone to be cautious of national polls, especially this far ahead of the first votes in Iowa, because national votes really are just more of a measure on popularity. Or national polls, rather, are just a more of a measure on popularity. It's not really a good measure of fundraising, et cetera, you know, all this stuff. And with this, Iowa and New Hampshire are going to be the ultimate deciding factors. But Haley, I could see Trump maybe picking somebody like Haley, but I think that she's still running to be VP because she's still, her foreign policy is what hangs me up. Her foreign policy is one that I cannot abide. But I don't dislike her as a person. I think I met her once backstage at a speaking event. I think she had spoken right before me. I can't remember. I know I met her once very, very briefly. Never really spoken with her. But, you know, she's very nice. It's not a personal thing. I just don't agree with her foreign policy. I think it's very it's neocon. It really is. It's very W. Bush. Very, 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 very much so. I mean, it is like a flashback to that. I have a problem with that. That's a big problem with me. And so especially when you still have you still have better choices, I think, in the primary, it's just a no-go for me. But I just still, because she never says anything about Trump. And I just think that when you're focusing everything on the second person in this primary in terms of polling, et cetera, then to me, it sounds like you're running a stalking horse campaign, which I would bet money on it that Vivek is. I would bet literally six figures on that. I think that Haley is also. Not so much a stalking horse. I don't think that there's any kind of secret agreement. I do think that she does want to be VP, because I don't think that she would translate nationally with her foreign policy and some of her other approach. I think she would try to moderate going into the general, but I think it would be too late. And also, I think that she, because she was in the Trump administration, that branding is going to stick to her. And you remember, it does not matter if you like the whole idea of the MAGA label. That's irrelevant here. What I'm telling you is that all of this is decided in the margins. And I'm telling you what the margins think of that branding. And the margins they rejected it last Tuesday. They rejected it in Virginia and they rejected it in Ohio. So you have to finesse the branding. And she is branded with that because she was a part of the administration. So you have to consider that. Again, this is not people disagreeing with you about who you like or what you perceive to be your priority in the primary. This is people like me wanting to win in 2024. That is literally my only concern, is I want to win. I don't care. I don't have fealty to any candidate because I don't believe in that. They should have fealty to us. I will never bend a knee to a candidate, ever. I never have a loyalty like that to a candidate, ever. I have rejected overtures from candidates before. I have rejected job offers from candidates before. I have zero interest in, that kind of pay cut, because my special interest is my audience. I have zero interest in that. And I also, I can't. That's just not my deal. And so I want to win. I just want to win in 2024. That is the only, if you want to know about my perspective, that's literally the perspective through which I see everything. And 2024, I think more so than any other election, is all margins. And people need to be looking at Ohio and Virginia as giant, giant warning signs. And they're not. It's going to be decided by the margins. Now, I will say there have been a couple of people that I think are making a decent point. Now, so Ann Coulter and I used to talk. We were never like BFFs or anything like that. We knew each other. And she and I got in it in the 2016 because in the very beginning of the primary, I was back in Perry. And she liked Trump for his immigration stuff. And I always went for governors over non-governors. And we got in it. And she like unfollowed me on social media and all this stuff, totally unfollowed me. And then she turned around and then she was like harsher than anybody on Trump. And she said, I will say this, she said, made a point where I don't necessarily agree all the way or disagree all the way, because there's a lot of nuance here. The point that she brought up, and I've heard a couple of other people make this point similarly, is she was saying that Republicans have to be careful, particularly on what she called a hardline anti-abortion stance. So she's pro-life, a hardline anti-abortion stance, because she says the left is going to make that the defund the police of the GOP. Now, I've seen this worded differently from other people, and we've talked about it here on the show, because where's the election determined? On the margins. And that's why you see this messaging from the left, especially with the issue of abortion in these states that have passed it after Roe v. Wade sent everything back to the states. Republicans have been very, very bad in navigating the messaging and saying that, yes, stop saying that there aren't exceptions. There are literally exceptions, literally in every single state that has passed any kind of regulation on this. But here's the problem that they're running up against. So this is another thing that I saw. It was, what's his face? He used to, Chris Wallace. He was over at Fox. Now he's over at CNN. He said something very interesting. He was saying that how are they going to talk to voters about this? Because how are you going to tell them that you're pro-life, but yet, yeah, you want the 15-week? I'm pulling this story up, so bear with me. This was, I think, yeah, he said, why is the abortion murder crowd says 15 weeks is fine? Now, that's the point that he made on CNN on Sunday. Now, it is, first off, he's begging the question. He's begging the question with us because he's presuming that he's saying that, you know, the abortionist murder people are saying 15 weeks is fine. Thus, you know, so why are they saying that as a way to intimate that the legitimacy of the movement is called into question? But he's assuming that his premise is sound. Thus, the conclusion is sound. So he's begging the question because he's making these assumptions. No one is saying that 15 weeks is fine. They're saying that they will start at that point to walk it back. If that saves an additional X amount of lives, then they will move to that point away from abortion on demand up until birth, taxpayer funded. They will move to that point. That's what they're saying. But remember, when you are explaining you are losing, and again, where are elections won and lost, especially the last two margins? That is never going to be more important ever than it will be in 2024. It's all about the margins. This is going to be something that will play in the margins, which is why Republicans, I get it. It's like we've been arguing about this damn issue forever. I get it. And I also understand if you're pro-life and you think that any compromise, but do you want to say, let's not save any lives if I can't get everything I want, or let's start convincing people and start saving more lives and work incrementally? I mean, and then at least save more lives today than you did yesterday. That's how a lot of other people look at it. And there has to be a way to quickly and efficiently message that in 30 seconds or less, where you're not in this never-ending cycle of explaining and then losing credibility. Because the longer you explain, the investment of legitimacy that a voter has in you will decrease. They will start to question your credibility the longer you take to explain something. And so that they have got to get a handle on this, because that is what the left is gearing up to do. I have sound bites from Premier Jayapal who were saying, yes, this is going to be our big issue. I think that she was saying, she's talking about the margins, and she was saying that abortion and reaction to Gaza, that's going to be a big issue in 2024. We're going to talk about that coming up. In fact, we may hit that again tomorrow, because that's, she's telegraphing. She's telling you where they're going with this.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is terrifying. So this apparently took place in Rome, where a lion got loose. People were even told to shelter in place because, I mean, it's a lion. Caused terror, prowled the streets freely. It escaped from the circus. And it was a town near Rome, caused terror amongst all the residents. They had footage all over social media showing this lion wandering around the streets of this small town. It has just a population of just over 40,000. And everyone said that they were told to shelter inside as authorities.
What the heck I'd do?
A lion? Yeah, I'd be like, free lion. Gonna get a lion.
A free lion.
Finders keepers. Ma'am, we think you have that. No, this is my lion. It's not the lion you're looking for, it's just mine. I don't know what I'd do with it just to have one. I feel like I'm Snow White, like I want all the animals, they're all mine. This is a terrifying article. This came out, this story here. It showed that more than 100 veterans died. More than 100 veterans died at a New York home after one of the worst COVID outbreaks in the state. And they said that apparently weren't, was anybody know where Anthony Cuomo is? Anybody know where Cuomo is? Everybody's looking for him. It was a housing facility in New York City. They had an outbreak apparently, and it was the New York State Veterans Home in St. Albans. And they said that all of these are already super critically ill veterans. So they were already way super immunocompromised. They were all incredibly elderly. But apparently they weren't even given any treatment. No one even took them to the hospital. Nothing. They just let them. Oh, boy. Wow. I'm just going to say a word that rhymes with schmalsuit. Let's see here. Humans apparently have a third set of teeth. Popular Mechanics says that there might be medicine to help them grow. Why would you want them to grow? What? That's terrifying. It was a 2021 study out of Japan. They said you can target genes to regrow teeth in animals. Now they're doing clinical trials on how to do this in humans. They said that, you know, that's what makes sharks so intriguing, because they can just grow teeth. regrow teeth. So they're doing a clinical trial of medicine, which they hope will be available for general use in 2030 to regrow teeth. That would only work for people like Hunter Biden. Maybe. I don't know. The stores are snubbing Black Friday's mega sales. Apple, Tiffany's, others are deciding to not participate. They're snubbing the Black Friday stuff. And FedEx accidentally delivered $20,000 in lottery tickets to a woman's house.
I tell you what, if you consider yourself a patriot, right? You're a patriot. You should be drinking gallons of Bud Light. Believe me when I tell you.
Wait. I should be boycotting Bud Light.
Gallons of Bud Light. You should have Bud Light drums stacked up in your garage and drinking it right out of the keg. They are way more aligned with you than most of these other beer companies are. That I guarantee you.
Take it
from somebody who's in the know, who does business with beer companies. You are way more aligned with Bud Light than you are with other beer company.
I mean, they didn't come into partnership with you by accident.
No.
That's $105 million.
We had multiple bidders on the table.
Did they seek you out?
We had multiple bidders on the table. They were one of them. And as I, history has shown me with relationships that I've had with
other
beer
companies.
So he
says, I don't dislike Dana White. And I've watched UFC. I get into it more for the drama and the, the people's story because I'm a chick. So that's, that's what I follow. My husband's all about, I love the art of the fight. I'm like, whatever. I don't even know what he did here. He's rolled around and got him in his leg. Great. I just love the story and the family that's cheering them on, And anyway, but we talked about this a little earlier because I think, I've seen a lot of white flags of surrender in my time, but never have I seen one with so many zeros on it before. Be waving in the air. I mean, that was something else. That's not winning the culture war. By the way, can I also ask, how is it patriotic to drink a foreign company's crappy beer? That's a new measure that I haven't heard before. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you at the bottom of this third hour. So there's a beer company out there. Maybe you've heard of them. They are an American beer company. I dare say that it is patriotic to drink this beer. In fact, I would wager you that if back during the day at King Street, the King Street Patriots, Paul Revere and the members of the Committees of Correspondence, if they had gathered around the table to pound their fists on the wood talking about overthrowing King George and they were drinking ale, it would have been this ale. Yeah. And if you could transport it back in time, they would have said, throw all that commie swill aside. Give us some ultra right. And because really beer helped make America. Joining us right now is that's a commercial right there. Is Seth Weathers. This is his baby. He created ultra right beer. You also know him as conservative dad. But Seth Weathers, and you can find ultrarightbeer.com. And it's a great tasting beer. I drink it. We're doing Operation Pawpaw this Christmas because we're getting my stepdad to switch to exclusively ultra right. That kicks off on the 23rd of this month. Seth joins us on the show via Skype now. So I wanted to get set, and we're going to talk about the calendar and all of that. But here's my question to you. How is it patriotic? How do you measure patriotism? By how much crappy foreign beer you drink?
I like Dana White, but I was not a big fan of that segment. But I will say this, for $105 million, God knows what you could get me to say. So I think that may have been what happened there.
I think everybody can be bought. I've maintained this. Like, I've told everybody what my price tag is. Selective immortality in a Hogwarts castle. I've been very open about this. Like, you give me those things, hell, I'll talk about your beer too. I mean, it's $105 million, but they've never apologized. And that's what I use that beer to wash the steins that I use for Ultra Right. So I'm just curious, what do you make about, and that's kind of what it is. I mean, there was never any kind of, rectifying that. And I do think it's important because beer is very American. This is a very American thing. And I'm not joking when I say our country was founded on it.
I agree. It was. And look, the thing is, I was so proud of conservatives for sticking to a boycott for once, because we never do. We've always we skipped a few football games when they took a dump on us. We've done this, we've done that, but we've never followed through. And this was the one time we were following through. And look, I think the vast majority of Americans are following through, because the vast majority of Americans did not receive $105 million to say something nice about them. And so I think that I think the boycott holds. I think they're throwing a lot of money to try to end it, but I think the boycott will hold for most Americans.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, a lot of people are just they're not sold. And I like the fact, I made this comment earlier, I love the fact that there were a lot of alpha dudes out there that stood up and said, we don't like the way that you're treating our ladies by having this dude cosplay as a chick. I appreciated that because I feel like feminism, third wave feminism, has been so insane for the past like 15 years that it's really been a lot of the pushback has been women led. And we're kind of tired about this. I've always joked, I'm like, my husband can't hit a chick, but I can, you know, and I feel like it has really been female led and we're tired of it. Like, we're tired of that whole thing. So it was nice to see a lot of dudes stand up and say, we do not appreciate that, because let's be real. This is a dude driven market. That dudes, this is the beer that a lot of them would drink. Although I have a family member who says that really, it's really women who drink that beer. But that being said, you know, with this, what do you think about it? I mean, where are they going to go? Like, what are people looking for in beer? Like, obviously taste, but I think there's more to it than that.
You got to have great beer, but for the longest time, beer was about fun, fast cars, beautiful women, and great patriotism. And we've lost that. Look at the commercials they're making now. These companies are unrecognizable for what they were in the 80s and 90s. It would have been considered controversial, you know? And that's kind of, you know, people are trying to make ours out like some of our commercials and stuff are controversial. But, like, it's really not that controversial if you just believe kind of some basic things. Like, you know, chicks without, you know, I don't know what I can say on here.
Oh, you can guess. Yeah, go right up to the line.
Yeah, chicks without, that's kind of our, you know, that's where ours are here at there Ultra Right Beer.
I encourage that. So that's on me. You know what? I wanted to say it for forever. So he did. So I'm glad he did. Talking to Seth Weathers, who's the head of Ultra Right Beer. And you've kind of went into that because I was, you know, in the beginning, I've always said, you know, all that company has to do is apologize. But I want to see more nostalgic, old school type marketing with this. Because I think that women have their things that are marketed to them in a certain way, and dudes have things that are marketed to them in a certain way. So to that effect, let's talk about the calendar, because you did a calendar and there are swimsuit shots in it. And I'm glad that there are. Now, I'm not saying I'm in one because I got two boys and, you know, they are on the internet and they see everything. But I like the fact that I'm in a calendar like this. And I like the fact that there are women who do swimsuit calendars for beers, because I think I want more of the Tawny Catane on the hood of the car in a White Snake video selling stuff. Talk to me about this.
I think that that's a great idea. And that's why we did it. So, yes, we do have conservative dads, real women.
And that's Riley Gaines that's on the cover.
That's Riley on the cover. I hear September's pretty solid, though. You should check out September.
I've heard September, which is, as we all know, the best month of the year. I heard that September is pretty fantastic. Yeah,
I agree. It's got some gunplay action there, too.
So yes, I have heard that. So where did you get the idea? Tell me about how this came to fruition.
You know, I think it kind of just goes back. Well, I don't know why I'm going to go here, but I'm going to. So Sports Illustrated started putting out calendars and magazines with fat chicks in bikinis. And I was like, this is the destruction of America is happening right before our eyes. And I was like, someone's got to do something about it. And who better to do something about it than conservative dads ultra right beer? Amen. So you're not going to have fat chicks and bikinis in our calendar. Sorry, not sorry.
No, don't be sorry about that.
Yeah, I know. I said not sorry. But yes, that's the thing. We're getting back to just the basics of what these beer companies were. And now it's controversial.
I don't understand how in the world that's controversial. It's like, that's like when Victoria's Secret started having, oh my gosh. So like in our town square, there was a giant ad in the window. And this, I'm not saying like this was somebody who was like a little tubby. I'm talking about like morbidly obese. Like,
yes,
I think that
it.
You probably would not have been able to see the panties because everything that hung over. And it was a giant ad in the window. And I almost, like, I had to stop in the middle of the street. And I'm like, what am I seeing here? Is this Elaine Bryant? I don't know. I don't mean to be ignorant, but
you're healthy at any size.
No, you're not.
Right?
Yeah. No, you're not. Some people are more prone to drop dead because they're not healthy. I mean, that's the whole thing.
This is correct.
It's like embracing or trying to celebrate unhealthiness. No one is saying that you got to be a size zero, but you don't have to be a size like triple aught. There's a difference. Right.
I agree. And we've just reached a stupid place in our world. And so I think that here at Conservative Dads Ultra Right, we're trying to battle back against some of the stupid things we see in the world. And that's what we're doing with our marketing, with our product, with everything else. And by the way, a portion of the proceeds of this actually goes to the Riley Gaines Center, which combats men and women sports.
Yes.
And she has done an incredible job on that. And yeah, I think we've raised close to $20,000 for already on this calendar, and we're hoping to raise a whole bunch more.
And that's fantastic. I love the do-gooder aspect of it, because that's great. But really selfishly, I like the fact that I'm in this calendar, and I like that you're celebrating women who are healthy women. Yeah, where
real
we're not
women.
Exactly. We're not celebrating, you know, unhealthy. Because I feel like it is, it's like reverse body shaming the way that they do it.
Correct.
So how do people, first off, how do people get this calendar? Because I've already had people saying, can you just send me one? I'm like, yeah, it's not really how it works.
ConservativeDad.com.
Okay.
We'll pull it right up. And I will send you plenty of them.
So you can do giveaways?
Yeah, you can give them out, Christmas gifts, whatever. It's the ultimate Christmas gift.
Yes, it does make a good Christmas gift. I just remember every dude I knew, all my male cousins. I have like 23 cousins, and most of them are dudes. They all had, like, growing up, they all had, like, it's always like the female posters or the Sports Illustrated calendar. They take it out of the Sports Illustrated issue, and they'd put it. Everybody had that, and there's nothing wrong with it. Everybody had that. It's normal.
There's something wrong with them now. They're a little rough, I hate to say. You're not going to want to look at this. It's going to be an unfortunate scenario. You're going to go back, and you're going to lose those childhood memories real quick.
So tell me about
girls ate those girls. Sorry.
No, actually, that's a great point. Tell me, where can people get the beer? Because I know that you're expanding distribution. So talk to me about if people are like, I want to get a six or a Ultra Bright, where do I go?
So we're in multiple states right now. Like in stores, in your package stores, that kind of thing. We're talking with some of the good-sized grocers chains as well. But if you're not in one of the states we're in, you can go to ultrarightbeer.com, and we can ship to most states.
Merry Christmas to you all. Ho, ho, ho. Get you some Ultra and ship to most states. Get some Ultra Right beer. Well, conservativedad.com, that's where you can get the calendar. I highly suggest you all, because I've heard, just one more time, I've heard, Kane, you're unaware of this. September is like, is really.
Can I give them a little preview
of
September?
You may.
I feel
you
like people need to see that. I have one with me, believe it or not.
So, yes, you may do that. September, I mean, that.
Guns blazing.
Look at it. I had no idea that that was going to be September. I was just speaking about the month of September innocently.
They could celebrate your entire birthday month.
Well, I do have birthday month.
She mentioned wanting September while holding two guns. I was like, all right.
Yeah, I was like, my birthday's in September, and I'm holding two of my AR-15s. I'm like, my birthday's in September, Seth. And he's like, oh, so I guess you want September, huh? I'm like, oh, I don't know, just a thought. So anyway, thank you for including me in it. I'm very flattered. And the photos are beautiful. I mean, everything is very tastefully done. Obviously, Riley Gaines is in the swimsuit. She's like the one that I would be like, yes, she needs to be on the cover in the swimsuit. She's like made of 1,000% muscle. But this is fantastic. UltraRightBeer.com and ConservativeDad.com is where you can get the calendar. Get Ultra Right Beer. I like it. And I do drink it. You send us beer and I've been drinking it.
It's a great beer. We need to get distribution. We need to get distribution into the state of Texas physically in stores. We're working on that. So hopefully it'll be.
Who can I go aggravate about that? Is there like a beer minister of beer that I can go aggravate?
There kind of is. I'm telling you, when you get the level of corruption and nonsense that goes on with the alcohol industry, it's a 4.8% alcohol, and they treat us like we're making nuclear weapons. Okay, it's really unbelievable. You have to get Boss Hog's approval to get in stores in each state. That's literally a thing we have to deal with. It's wild. With the distributor.
That's like a whole other story. We're going to have to talk about that another time. Yes. Because that's all the regulations.
It would blow your mind. You'd lose your mind.
I would lose my mind over that. Cut that and save
correct.
That. Save that forever. Seth Weathers, ultrarightbeer.com, conservativedad.com. Always so great to talk with you. Thank you so much for doing this, for including me. And we'll make sure we put this out online too, so people can get
their
calendars.
Awesome.
Make sure you get them, get your beer, all that good stuff. Thanks, Seth. Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks, Dan. Mm-hmm. Take care.
We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of our broadcast. Yes, all very tastefully done. Like, you can get this calendar. I would feel fine if my son had this calendar of some of the swimsuit. I can't say it. Swimsuit shots. You would be totally comfortable with this, literally with your son hanging out in their bedroom, like all my cousins did when I was growing up. It's all very artfully, tastefully done. The photographer's great. All right, as we get moving, Kane said the term is high calorie human. I just saw that. He said it, not me, but I wish I did. Nor is a lie. All right. I'm just sitting here jamming to Christmas music, and I'm also fuming over this ridiculous, we got to talk about this, the Southwest Airlines policy, guys. I don't mean to be mean. I want everybody to be healthy, and I don't want to be like mean to nobody. But can we just talk for a second? Southwest Airlines is being praised for allowing customers of size policy. So if you got an overweight flyer, they purchase one seat and they get another one for free. They may get two for free.
What?
Yeah. You could get bumped for this. You could legit get kicked off your flight for this. I'm not even joking with you. And one part of the story at New York Post, it says, quote, if it's determined that a second or third seat is needed, you'll be accommodated with the complimentary additional seat. That's verbatim from the policy.
Second or third?
Or third seat.
Why are you flying at that point?
Which means y'all's prices at Southwest are going to go up and you could get bumped.
If you need three seats to fit on a plane, you're really playing with the physics of everything there. I'm sorry. It's time you stop being so damn selfish and take the bus.
I don't want to be mean to people, but that is not healthy. It genuinely is not healthy. You've got to, I mean, intermittent fasting, like, for instance, I eat so ridiculously healthy. I've cut out. I don't eat dairy except cheese at holidays. No processed sugar. It's strictly like greens and red meat. I intermittent fast. I do all that stuff. You got to get healthy. Diet is literally 90% of it. 90%. And you can, you don't have to be a size zero, but you can get healthy just doing those things, starting with that. All right. Today's stupidity came.
And by the way, Southwest would do, I mean, I don't know how this is
great. We're going to talk about this tomorrow.
Business
you're flying
model.
Southwest
I know.
At some point.
I don't know why it's a good business
Ooh.
Model. But anyway, this is KJP trying to gaslight us all. Listen to this.
Prices are down for eggs, milk, toys, and TVs. Gas prices are down by $1.90 from the peak after Putin's war began. And wages are rising and higher than before.
Where is she shopping?
Wages are outpaced by inflation.
Can we go there?
Inflation kills wages. I don't know what she's doing, but Merry Christmas.
She does not do her shopping. She does not do her shopping. Come on. All right, folks, that does it for us today. I will be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Make sure you sign up for the newsletter over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Find us on YouTube and Facebook. Like and subscribe. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow.